You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
And it's that time again. Time for a Tim's pick.
Yeah!
What are we smoking this time, Brad?
We are smoking the Casada Keg. Kind of a St. Patrick feel to the label here, with the shamrock and everything.
Got a shamrock on it. I think this was intended for their St. Patty's Day release. But it's cool. It even comes in, the box looks like a little beer keg. It's like a little wooden barrel.
Yeah, it's very unique branding. I like the fact that, you know, on their the website here, it just shows a picture of that keg of cigars with what looks like a glass of Guinness, if my eyes aren't deceiving me.
Yeah, they even said that this one was made to pair with an Irish stout, so, you know, Guinness.
And we are drinking a stout.
Because they also have an Oktoberfest cigar that's made to pair with, you know, German Oktoberfest beers. This is a... let me see.
It looks like the wrapper is going to be a Pennsylvania broadleaf. Most of your binder and filler...
Nicaraguan binder and fillers with a Pennsylvania broadleaf wrapper. So this is kind of your Maduro, you know, dark cigar.
Yeah, and it looks like each keg comes with roughly 21 cigars. This is a 6x50 Toro, and
they only released 250 kegs of 21 cigars, so it's kind of a limited release for, you know, kind of an early St. Patty's Day. I know they had one keg in at the cigar shop. I don't know if they have any more than that, but they still have plenty of these if you're in the area and want to go pick one up.
Yeah, this is a relatively inexpensive cigar too. What is it, $8-$9?
Yeah, so I think it was like $9-$10 or something like that. It's gonna be about your average price depending on where you go.
So yeah, I mean, this it's a great cigar. The burn evenly, a little bit stronger in taste than I kind of expected. It definitely has a little bit of that, you know, peppery kick to it, which I like.
Yeah, it's definitely a stout cigar to go with your stout, and I always give you a good excuse to pour another Guinness.
Absolutely.
And with that, dust off your cogs and your goggles, folks, because we'll be right back with our steampunk episode.
Stay tuned.
Extraordinary. Oh, yeah. Get your goggles ready. It's about to go up. Everybody in the parlor, get ready to dab it up. Dragon Con TV about to let it fly. We blipping this. Let's fly.
I'm on a blimp.
I'm on a blimp.
I'm on a blimp. Everybody look at me, cause I'm floating on a blimp.
I'm on a blimp.
I'm on a blimp.
I'm on a blimp. I'm taking a good hard look at the motherfucking blimp.
I'm on a blimp, darling. My, oh, take a look. I'm flying. Straight floating all above in a wonderful sky. Cruising through the sky on a big airship. You can't stop me, bloody wanker, cause I'm on a blimp.
Drinking Earl Grey hot with a crumpets. I got my long coat and my Google goggles. I'm on steampunk. You in them all at Hot Topic.
You ain't steampunk. You're full of poppycock. I got steam, God. Babe. Keep the boiler temperature hot.
Keep
go around
hot.
The world. 80 days is too long. Get my blimp cool and listen to this dope ass song.
I'm on a blimp now, running your power. You need a Google map just to find your shower. I'm the king of the skies, straight hot air blimpin', you're all under the trees, while I'm here, big bimbo!
I say, that blimp is quite legitimate.
Alright, and welcome back to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. Today is our Steampunk 101 Intro to Steampunk episode, and to help us out with this topic, we got some special guests in the Nerd Cave. We got the boys from the Ratchet Retrocast, Mr. John Strangeway and DJ Dr. Q himself.
What?
Hey, how's it going?
So, yeah, excited that we're actually getting guests and we're branching out and everything. I mean, dude, we're making friends. It's awesome.
This is like the old school, you know, Batman meets the Green Hornet crossover episode. So.
Look at you guys. You're growing up.
Yeah, you're just going to leave that one alone. We're not going to take that any further.
No. See, here's the thing. This is how I was lured into here, is because Joe promised me we were going to do like a Green Hornet crossover and John was going to be Kato, which makes me the better version of Bruce Wayne, and John gets to drive me around all the time. I like this plan.
Yeah, Brad, you're my Robin. It's
But I've got the most mature hairline of us all.
You're still the youngest. Put on the green shorts.
Age is only a number.
I could pull off being Asian.
No way, dude.
Yeah,
I mean, if you can pull off Asian the way you can pull off Asian, the same way Sean Connery pulls off a Hispanic Egyptian. Whatever.
And Russian.
Sean Connery as Kato.
Oh, yeah, that'd be the best. Your call's ready, sir. Chop Shocky on the sky. Man, I can't do it the way John can. John can do the voice.
It's not Chinese. He does speak Japanese in Rising Sun. I've yet to get that down. He does have like two lines that he speaks in Japanese with the Scottish brogue.
So there's your new costume. You dress up like Kato, Sean Connery, and learn to speak Japanese.
That's the most racist thing I've ever heard.
Yes. You jerk.
It happens sometimes.
CQ, it follows me even down to other podcasts.
You can never escape it.
That's all right. I've got a censored sticker buried away over there somewhere. We can just start censoring everyone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, never happened.
I was a little worried about that.
No, we definitely earned our explicit tag on here. So,
you can swear on this show?
Oh yeah, go for it.
Oh fuck yeah! All right, let's do this shit. Exactly. All right, so we're talking about like gluing gears on shit, right? Is that
yeah,
the plan?
Yeah, pretty much. Let's just start with the basics. I'm still kind of a rookie at this. You know, Brad's like almost brand new. But when I start talking about steampunk, I get a lot of people like, you know, what the hell is steampunk? So. Since you are the, you know.
It's gluing random gears on shit. There you go. I'm kidding.
The jaded old hand at this now.
John and I have been around steampunk since it pretty much did its like early 2000 resurfacing. But, you know, steampunk's actually been around for a really long time. It actually started as a joke, so that's why I never take it seriously.
Yeah. We actually got to interview the guy who coined the term steampunk.
Yep, K.W. Jeter coined the term steampunk. We had him on the Ratchet Retrocast, and he was just awesome. He'll be the first one to tell you. I mean, it started off as a tongue-in-cheek joke because a bunch of cyberpunk writers, just for like, you know, shits and giggles, were like, you know, let's do this same like dystopia, corporations running everything, horrible life kind of classist structure, but let's do it in the 1880s, and that would be fun.
Because they were still trying to like follow in the footsteps of like H.G. Wells and Jules Verne's in that time area with, you know, sci-fi. But they were all like heavy, like, you know, following up on, you know, Blade Runner. Because
all that stuff kind of got, you know, adopted as steampunk, you know, later on. Yeah. That stuff was, you know, was already around long before someone's like, oh, yeah, that's going to be steampunk. That's what we're basing our stuff off of.
One of the first books in there was Morlock Knights and the Diamond Age and the Difference Engine, or Diamond Age, I forget. Which, anyway, Snow Crash is another good one. Anyway, so all these books were coming out right around the same time period. And then K.W. Jeter writes this letter to the editor of Locus Magazine, and as a tongue-in-cheek joke, calls it steampunk instead of cyberpunk. And that's the first reference of steampunk. And that was back in the 80s.
The best is his wife saved the like article, and she like photocopied it and turned it into like a PDF doc.
Like, we're copyrighting this stuff.
He's telling us this, right? He's like, the reason why people associate that term and me coining it is because anytime it got brought up, she would send that like PDF doc to all the different, you know, magazines or whatever that were like saying or talking about steampunk.
Yeah, at least somebody was like, you know, watching out for
She was a very, very ardent. She basically kept the torch going. So, yeah, no, KW was awesome in that interview. That was great. Yeah. But, okay, seriously, though, for folks that are just kind of coming in and they're wondering what the hell is steampunk, the best way for me to describe it is steampunk is kind of a catch-all term for people playing what if with history, kind of imagining present time era, what it would look like if the past back in the Victorian era was different. So it's like progression of technology, but still keeping that Victorian aesthetic or that very personal touch of making things really unique in your own. But it's just kind of reimagined into like a science fiction-esque future.
Yeah, that's one of the things that kind of like drew me to it from is just how it's kind of – it's not really – I mean, it's open up to pretty much any interpretation. There's not any like hard and fast rules about what is steampunk because – I mean, I've gone to not as many conventions as you guys gone to, but you see people like dress kind of World War II era, Victorian era, post-apocalyptic era, and it kind of all fits in, you know, is kind of adopted into that punk aesthetic.
Yeah, that's kind of why I say catch-all, because yeah. it spreads all over the place.
Yeah,
John, how do you describe it?
I mean, just, you know, similar in regards to what Q was saying. For me, it's when I run into, cause I get out into like the main public and they see me and they're like, what the fuck are you? And so they recognize the costume I'm wearing.
John, they don't see you. You implies you. No, they see the Fett. Okay. Those are two separate people. I need to make this clear.
All right.
So yeah, for anyone who's not familiar with John Strangeway,
because he's by the fact that you were two separate people. I need to point this out. Yeah. There's you, John Strangeway, and then there's Steampunk Boba Fett. They are not necessarily always the same person. Yeah,
if you don't know who John is, you know who Steampunk Boba Fett is because he's like at every damn convention.
Dude's internet famous. It's fine.
So this is the man behind the helmet.
It's uncanny.
That is usually under the mask.
But, you know, they see a very recognizable character, but they know something's not right with it. And that's what I enjoy is actually getting to explain to people. And usually I take it by their age range.
Yeah.
Because I like to give them some visual reference. In addition to saying, okay, basically it's, you know, it's Victorian era. And that ranges from end of Napoleonic time to up until World War I. So you got almost 100 years of different
and,
styles.
Not only European, but also early American fashion
and
technology.
It's more than that, too, because a lot of people actually expanded into that. And that's where you get into the multiculturalism aspect. And my favorite line, hearing one of the conventions when they were explaining, because predominantly what you see is either American or, you know, Victoriana London, right? But the 1890s happened everywhere in the world. So there are people that
just
are drawing
England.
From other European countries or Asian elements or African elements or even South American elements of that culture and style of clothing that they were wearing at the time.
I haven't seen any steampunk ninjas yet. That's something
I have. They're pretty wicked looking. I've even seen like a really badass steampunk samurai.
Yep.
Awesome.
And now that's just because John and I have been around since like, you know, the steampunk Jesus spoke to steampunk Moses or something.
and there was
although,
a party
although
of the
funny I should say
seas.
That is Buddy Christ at Dragon Con. He did a steampunk version this past year. So he was steampunk Buddy Christ.
It was awesome.
So it was
that's
the best.
Amazing.
I was
beautiful.
Like, oh my God, it's steampunk Jesus. It really is steampunk Jesus this time. So I totally got him. I not only like selfied with him, but I got him to like bless the sacrament of my steampunk party at the beginning. It was the best.
Oh, that's awesome. Vaguely, I think I remember saying that. Yeah, it was pretty.
What was it?
Amazing.
Where was I? Was I in Cincinnati? No, sorry. It was Raleigh. I was in Raleigh at Contemporal, and there was a dude who had. Remember the Velociraptor at Netherworld?
Yeah.
Okay, he had that getup. But he put a fucking monocle and a top hat.
Oh yeah! Oh my God, that was so funny.
It was so awesome.
And what was it this past year with the freaking Velociraptors? Because I saw them at like every damn con I went to.
Well, it's a new.
Well, I mean,
thing
there was a viral video that went out, and I think after
it's some Japanese company. They're selling the kit. So you can buy the.
That makes sense. Okay.
Pretty much a lot of these places all have like, there's like a big haunt supply convention every year. So you'll see a lot of the same stuff like show up because that's like the big thing at the show that year. So everybody has to buy one.
Yeah. And they give you instructions on how to make the rest of it and add, say, like some slight animatronic to it to give the eyes movement and the mouth and whatnot.
Because I saw, you know, I think one of the first videos I saw was a guy in the Velociraptor suit running around an office, complex.
Yeah, that went quite viral. Yeah, all right, so hold on a second. So getting back to steampunk real quick. So
what's that?
Yeah, I know, right?
See, we get distracted on our show,
this
too.
Isn't
it's
even
not
my
just
show
y'all.
When I'm trying to stay on topic. What the shit, guys? Come on, let's go.
Velociraptors are steampunk. We've already proved it.
So the Victorian era, like, it's what a lot of folks will go to when they say steampunk. But the thing to remember is they're full of shit. And I say that lovingly because most folks can't tell you when the Victorian era started and when the Edwardian era began.
Yeah, they can.
Because like John said, he kind of goes all the way till like beginning of World War One. Well, technically that's the Edwardian era, right?
Right.
So if you want to start to split hairs, it's actually like 1830s to 1900. And then from 1901 to 1914, just that 14-year period was the Edwardian period, right? So it all kind of blends in together, right? And so no one really splits hairs except for the people that start to want to, and they start to go, well, unless that's steampunk, that's diesel punk, or that's this punk or that punk or whatever punk. And like I tend to call it XYZ punk.
Yeah.
Because like there's folks now that are doing like Rococo punk and Nerf punk. I mean, you just name a thing.
So can I just throw it out there? I mean, being new to steampunk, but being a former punk rocker and everything, I mean, the attitude in my punk rock days is – fuck everything and just do what feels right.
And generally, that's why.
And glue a cog on it.
Exactly right. And that's why I use steampunk as the catch-all term, because I don't want to split hairs of whether something is diesel this or clockwork this or whatever. I'm like, whatever. It's steampunk. We all know this word. Let's just freaking use this word. And we're all having fun with it. Fuck it all. Do what you want. Have fun.
I mean, diesel
now,
punk.
Now, this isn't to say that it can't have zero rules. And sure, that's only because if you have zero rules, someone could just dress up as Barney and say it's steampunk. I'm sorry. It doesn't work like that. You know, there needs to be some sort of like nod to the past science fiction-y element to it, whatever that may be.
Q, I the one like kind of like I agree with you, you know, in the umbrella. The way I look at it is like metal. Metal genre encompasses industrial, death.
Yeah, you can get some deep categorizing
metal,
on metal.
Right.
And
now you've got probably thrash. 1,000 subgenres.
What they do
I agree what you're saying, John.
Swedish polka metal.
What I'm talking about, though, is like there's the umbrella steampunk term, and then there's like the neo-Victorian and the diesel punk and the – and you know, like the clock punk kids.
Right.
Like I really like the clock punk kids. I don't see nearly enough of those guys.
No. But there's they use those terms. Say like in out west they have – there's dust punk and desert punk.
Oh yeah, that was
what
fun.
The hell is dust punk?
It's like the frontier. It's like it's a
there's no grass.
It's a way to put punk at the end of what's actually the Weird West.
Yeah. Well, let's kind of like dive into that. So y'all, we've just kind of seen the local southern and a little bit of the
most people down
northern
here do pretty
stuff.
Much steampunk or diesel punk.
So what's some of the like regional differences y'all have encountered in?
Oh man, we love talking about that.
Yeah.
We will nerd out about regional differences for like hours. So let's try to sum it up here.
Let's say the Northeast is typically – it's similar to the Southeast. It's just that they are definitely more high-end fashion, New England Victorian style.
And the thing to remember though, like the regional pieces, there's like two influences, right? One is the availability of stuff and two is like the local pop culture geek scene, right? Yeah. So like what John was saying, like it's completely accurate because up there the big thing to do in the Northeast is go to Ren Fairs or go antique. Because the thing is their antiques are like expensive as crap.
Yeah.
So they actually have everything made like themselves. Like they don't have it made themselves. They go out and they buy it.
Yep.
And so they just consume all of these like really just things that we would never spend all that money on. We just wouldn't.
Down here it's all like, you know,
I got to figure out what I can get for $10 at a thrift store and make it work. I'm going to glue some cogs on that shit.
Yeah. We do it much in the same way they do in the Northeast, but we do it with zero money. Like we go to thrift stores. We kind of take Nerf guns and spray paint them. And we just do whatever the hell we can with the parts we have.
And like
so we're a lot more like ragamuffin ragtag than the Northeast generally.
Like
now,
John
again,
was just saying
like
so what you're
really
saying also kind of definitely
the South is the most creative.
There's probably definitely a climate impact too on what people are wearing.
With a lot of folks, and I'm not sure how wide your listener base is at this point in time, but I would say everyone's really creative in their own kind of ways, but it's all about the availability of parts, right?
Availability and
so,
environment, and you know, like you said, the Texas and Southwestern. You look at where they're living, so they're pulling more from frontier Wild West style.
Like I would never be able to wear the Jabba costume in Texas because I would die of heat exposure. But in Ohio, I wore that thing all day. It was comfortable up there because it was kind of cold, but. Yeah, Atlanta in the summer too. No, I wear that thing for like 5 minutes for one panel, and then I'm out of that.
Can I steampunk a T-shirt?
I'm gonna collapse.
And there, from what I've seen out west, is also a little bit more post-apocalyptic as well.
Well, that's also because one of the first experiences of steampunk back there was at Burning Man.
Right.
So all the burner community people are in that like desert post-apocalyptic kind of Mad Max-y kind of influence. And that's also big with like Abney Park's influence, and they're a huge influence in the culture. But you know, there's the Pacific Northwest folks, which are really like high end neo Victorian, probably because their homes are still made from that freaking time. Like the place, you just looking around, if you see pictures of Seattle, you can just clearly see it as like this perfect steampunk mecca. I mean, the place is just gorgeous.
But there, you got the hipsters that are dressed steampunk just every day.
Oh yeah, just all the time. I mean, yeah, that's like, just like that Key and Peele, like just like that Key and Peele sketch.
Also, back in the Seattle music scene and stuff, though, I mean, you had some of the Birth of Punk and some of the original stuff. I mean, I imagine there's some elements being pulled from aspect of things as well.
Well, I mean, Abney Park used to be.
No, no offense or nothing. How old are you again?
I'm almost. I'll be 30 in March.
Yeah, he's so 20. He's so the young and you the should podcast. Remember that the punk scene started with the Sex Pistols in the UK, not really in Seattle. Like, you know, and then there's the Ramones, also not in Seattle. I mean, because the thing is, I'm a punk kid too. That's kind of how I came into steampunk. Like, I was huge into ska, like the ska side of punk more so than the punk. But like, yeah, no. One of the things I love about it is that whole like, screw you all. I'm doing my own thing and having a good time. But yeah, no, I do agree with you. Like a lot of the what eventually became grunge music started off with like great fucking punk roots on the West Coast. Like West Coast punk is its own type of thing, and it really did influence a whole lot of the music scene. But that's also funny because one of the things about steampunk that's unique as a subculture is that it didn't come from music. Like so much of our subculture came from music trends, right? So there's like the goths and the preppy kids and the bubblegum punk kids and the what else? Those damn emo kids. They listen to something depressing, I'm sure.
Hey, you know what?
Is there emo steampunk yet? I've not seen that.
I mean, the scene, the culture stems from literature first and foremost. And so that's why it's hard to define steampunk music. Like, they class a bunch of bands as steampunk, and there's only really a few of them that kind of like, all right, they have their own style, but all their music is different.
Yeah.
It's more so of like the lyrics and a little bit of how they kind of like mesh different instruments.
Yeah, I mean, is it the – because we've been kind of digging into that that music scene a little bit. Is there like something that – specifically says, all right, this is steampunk? Is it just the aesthetic? You know, can they play metal and dress steampunk and that makes them a steampunk band?
That's automaton.
Like automaton.
Or is it, like said, the content of the music itself? Or is this just one of the things, like, you know, people have adopted it and said, all right, this is, you know, this is our music, this is steampunk music, whether the band wanted to be steampunk or not.
Well, that happened with Steam Power Giraffe.
Like, since I do DJing for steampunk shows a whole lot, I tend to get asked that question a whole hell of a lot, and I try to basically say in the nicest way possible, but since I can actually swear on this show, it's going to be fun.
Correct. Cue uncut.
Steampunk music is whatever the fuck steampunks listen to. It doesn't.
Well, I mean, I think, you know.
The way to peg it down is you have basically two different varieties. You have the bands that are whatever the fuck they are, but they are presenting in a steampunk aesthetic.
Yep.
So you have bands that, I mean, if you were just to listen to them and never look at them at all, you would just go, this is a rock band. This is a metal band. This is a whatever band. But when you actually see their look or how they kind of present themselves and their kind of stage persona and the way they kind of promote and all of that, it's very in that steampunk, neo-Victorian, whatever. And there you have just as much right to be there as the people that are doing steampunk musically with like various odd instrumentations, like old versions of guitars and mandolins mixed with drums and electric guitars and all this other crazy stuff. Those guys, even though those guys are dressed like any old like rocker would be dressed if they lived in the Pacific Northwest, all hipster-like, but their music is definitely appealing to the steampunk kids. Or like, say, in our own little neck of the woods, you've got like Hellblinky, which is like the look of them. I call them like the, you know, carnival, like the a carny used car salesman. I mean, it just looks crazy. And their music is just insane.
But
they've been adopted by the steampunk folks because it's this weird eclectic thing that we like listening to because it gives us that kind of feeling like we're not in modern time.
Well, funny enough, Steam Power Giraffe, real quick, as you were saying, like, they weren't steampunk.
Nope, not at all.
Their look,
yeah,
doing the automaton robots style.
I watched a couple of their
literally
videos.
The steampunk community was like, you're ours. Like, they just got claimed. They were like, okay, well, we've got a huge audience now, so all right.
We're this.
But they were buskers at the San Diego Zoo.
Yep.
Really?
Yeah. And they had their own original songs too. But they didn't call themselves out in the beginning as a steampunk band. They just kind of got folded in with the, you know, community.
Because that's one of the things that I really enjoy about it too, is because it's, I mean, I've been to shows where it sounds very Victorian music, you know, and, you know, they're playing old style, a lot of, you know, strings and stuff like that. So it kind of looks like what you would hear at an old timey parlor. But then you go to another show and it's like a straight up, you know, metal band or some kind of electro music, but it's, you know, either the content or just the style of it, you know, makes it, you know, steam. So yeah, it's back to the whole thing. It's punk is part of the definition. So it's pretty much, you know, whatever you want it to be. Yeah. You know?
Q, what's that band that you play? Carnival.
Caravan Palace.
Caravan Palace. That's it.
Oh, yeah, the electro swing stuff, man. That is so quintessentially like all about the steampunk kids.
Yeah, but they're you know, where they look, are they from Europe?
They're a French band.
Okay, yeah. And you listen to their music, you're like, oh, this is what you'd think to be listening to if you were at, like, say, a steampunk event. But they're just a electro swing band.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So it kind of pulls from a lot of different elements.
Yeah, no, it really does. I mean, and even like, let's say outside of music, like other big subculture influences, like fashion, right? Like we've pulled, like there are goth influenced steampunk kids. There are like really traditional historical era, like influenced steampunk kids. And then a whole lot of them are folks that are kind of almost like feeding off of each other in the whole cosplay community folks. And these are people that are inspired by art and things that they see on the internet and other people's costumes and all this other stuff. And they're pulling from convention culture and not from anything else. And it's the weirdest thing to see kind of come about, because John and I have been around it since 2009, 2008, 2009, somewhere around there. And I've seen it go from being influenced by books, being influenced by goth or other kind of music subculture, to become what it is right now, which is like people are pulling from convention photos that they see of other people's costumes.
Yeah, because I've definitely like talked to a few people that aren't really into the, I guess, expanded universe of books, comics, whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, I saw this style and I kind of liked it, so that's how I got into it. And then maybe discovered the other stuff later on. But you know, like, so for some people, it, like I said, they've found these steampunk books and whatnot and have expanded from there. But then, like I said, now it's gotten so big, it's like, oh, that's pretty cool. I want to dress that way. Oh, this is part of a whole nother culture.
Let me dive
into that a little bit.
Somebody like me I went to an AkerCon for, you know, that one day. That was my first real experience into, you know, the world of steampunk and to, you know, kind of get a feel for it. And, you know, seeing people's freedom and, you know, one of the things was there was no clearly defined, this is the right way to do it. I mean, you just had a whole mesh of people coming together. Yeah. Everybody was jiving and getting along. And I was like, damn, that's something I'd like to, you know, be more a part of.
People come from all different backgrounds and skill sets. And it's like, you know, I remember when I started wearing the costume and going to the different, you know, specifically steampunk conventions, you had people that were doing like kind of a variant of historical reenactment style. They were doing crossovers from existing characters that they knew and just taking the aesthetic and applying to it. They had their own, you know, original concepts that they were bringing to life. They were taking other culture fashion styles and mixing it. Q, you remember the one, the girl who had the kimono with the
The kimono with the Union Jack bustle? Yep. That was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's great in that sense that there is no set. I mean, there's a little bit of like guidelines if you want to adhere to them, but from really, there's no set like, all right, this is black and white. You know, you say you want to cosplay a Marvel character. Well, you've got that character that's been in existence for 40 plus years, and they have a couple styles you can wear, but that's what you're basing it off of. There isn't like steampunk, if you want to make your own character or just have your own sense of style,
like I said,
you can run with it.
Yeah, we went to the steampunk symposium last year, and it was a Star Wars theme that year.
Yeah,
the costumes
were
amazing. I mean, I think
my favorite
was amazing. You and John were in heaven, weren't you?
And Q pulling off the Max Rebo.
That's only because I love you, John.
Yeah, but you love it. You love that thing. Don't deny it.
I really did enjoy the hell out of that outfit. That is true.
I said, I was like, Q, if you're going to this thing, you need a steampunk Star Wars character. And he's like, who? And I was like, Max Rebo. He's like, the fat blue elephant? Fuck you, buddy. And I was like, no. You can mod it to wait.
That is,
I was like,
that is not how that went.
Listen, not at all. Don't bastardize
it. How this actually went was John, it started off that way. John said, you need to do a Star Wars outfit. And I'm like, fuck you. There's no way I'm ever doing a Star Wars outfit. And he goes, please, for me. And I go, John, are you asking me to do something? He's like, yeah. I'm like, John, you do realize in the years we've been friends, you have never asked me for anything. Are you sure? Are you sure that this is what you want to use this for?
I get a one pass.
And he goes, yeah, I'm like, and he's like, what, one pass? I'm like, look, everybody gets one, all right? So really think hard on this. Is that what you want? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, all right, well, I'll make you this deal. If you give me the perfect character, I will do it. And he was good on his word. He took a whole day. He thought about it. We went radio silence. He did not talk to me for the rest of the day. And the next day, he's like, all right, I got it. Max Rebo. And I thought about it for a second, and I just went, you know what? You're right. That's perfect. All right, I'm doing it.
You know, he's the musician.
Yeah,
he's got the
keys. Mobile DJ deck was awesome.
I was like, and that's brilliant. I was like, that's perfect for him. I was like, I was trying to associate something that, you know, can go with what Q does. You know, and I was like, that's perfect. He's got the musical background character, and he can be rocking a giant, awesome blue Victorian-style tux.
So that was a cool show for me because I just got to sit on a couch all day and look badass.
That was so awesome.
Yeah, that
John was having to run all over the con chasing people. I just got to sit there and hang out.
Totally
take
worth
pictures.
It, though. Totally worth
the,
it.
The Jabba the Hutt outfit was just inspired. That was well done.
Brad kind of said how he got into this. Since y'all have been around for a while, where did y'all get y'all start in steampunk?
You go with this, Q.
Jeez. I actually loved it before I knew there was a word. Like, because, I mean, the games I used to play back when I played video games were all about, like, magic and machine stuff. Or, like, my favorite Batman comic was Gotham by Gaslight. Like, all of this stuff that I just always kind of really enjoyed. And then I think I'd like to say it was shortly before Dragon Con 2008. Because I was friends with a lot of the folks that are just in the cosplay scene. And I've been going to Dragon Con since like 2000. And so folks were posting on LiveJournal, which tells you how long ago this was, about their costumes they were working on. And they were talking about this steampunk costume. And I went, and I looked at it, I'm like, this looks really like Victorian sci-fi. I am all about this. So then I went, you know, I took to Google or I think it was Google. Yeah, it was Google at the time. Because there were still other search engines out there. Google did not dominate everything until a little bit later. Anyway, so I went to went in and Googled it and started looking all over for things and just consumed so much of it that when I saw it at Dragon Con with the Outland Armor kids, I was like, oh my God, this is the coolest thing ever. And I went to go give them like mad compliments. And they like totally snubbed me at the time. It was hilarious. And so I was like, well, screw these kids. I'm not fucking doing this. Steampunk sucks. Meh. And then I saw more pictures and I was like, no, it's actually pretty awesome. But I just won't, you know, fine. I'll just kind of stalk it from afar and like that's all I'll do. And so I stayed with like not at all interested in it, but I kept like looking, poring over every single photo, researching every single thing. And when my lovely wife does burlesque and she wanted to do this like Clockwork Doll number back in like end of 2008. And I was like, okay, well, I've been consuming nothing but steampunk for like months before she wanted to do this. I'm like, you know, hey, there's this new band that it was an old goth band. They're putting out this new steampunk album called Lost Horizons. And I've been listening to this track on it that would be perfect for the act you want to do. So I played for her Dressimer's doll that Abney Park put out. And she was like, yes, this is perfect. I will do this steampunk act number thing only if you get up on stage with me.
I still want that song you modded.
Actually, Tallulah modded it. She made the edits all herself. So I was very proud of her. Anyway, so she like modified the song, got it to work out, and I pull her up on stage using like old, like some of my old LARP gear from back when I was LARPing. Just let's not mention that anymore. And I basically added a top hat to like my LARP outfit and some fancy clothes. And God, my first outfit was terrible. It was just terrible. Anyway, and I get up there, wind her up, and do the act. And right before I was going up on stage, they're like, hey, what do we call you? And this guy had never really emceed a burlesque show. He's normally doing other things. Because when you emcee a burlesque show, you only care about the girl taking her clothes off. You don't care about the person just kind of putting her up on stage. So I had never even thought about it. And I always go by Q. It's just short for Enrique. It's always been kind of what I went by. So all of a sudden, my wife just blurts out, Dr. Q. And that is how I got my costume, wow, my name, and all of that in that one that one off-the-cuff instant thing.
Was this the Time Traveler's Ball?
What was that?
What was this? Because I was there.
This was the Eccentric Fest in 2008 in Raleigh, North Carolina.
All right, never mind. You did it another time, but it was like maybe.
Oh no, we did that act together a bunch of times after that, but that was the very first time we did it. John. All right, what about you, John? You tell your story. I like your story. Too.
So funny enough, 2008 Dragon Con, I run to the Outlander group.
I think that's my origin story is similar.
And I see the style, and I was like, you know, curious. I was like, what the hell is this? Growing up in Jersey, the main convention that I would go to was New York Comic Con, and you didn't see this. It was pretty much everybody was in superhero, you know, costumes, right? And or maybe some sci-fi stuff. Nothing like this. And over the course between 08 and 09, I was like, I want a badass costume. So I'm like, I'm going back to Dragon Con. And I was down here in May, and that's when I met Matt Silva, and at the time the group he was with was Penny Dreadful Productions. And I liked their style. They were more kind of dirt and grime, like scuffed up. They'd been, you know, battle scarred or whatever. But they still had that same, you know, steampunk aesthetic to their look. And it really appealed to me. I said, okay, well, I've always wanted a Boba Fett costume. But I don't want to be just another Boba Fett. I want to be unique. My last name's Strangeway. I need to be fucking weird.
Yes.
So I talked
it's
to Matt.
It's not a stage name, folks.
No, it's not. Legit. I'll show you my license. And Matt said, he's like, I told him my name. He's like, bullshit, let me see your license. And
that's always the first words out of anyone's mouth when you introduce yourself.
Pretty much, yeah. And I explained to him what I wanted. He said, that's possible because, you know, there's 3 months before Dragon Con. And I came down the week before 09 Dragon Con, popped it on. And when I walked in, I swear to God, I'll never forget. It was when the alternate history track was still in the
It wasn't even a track yet, dude.
We did
a fashion show in the Marriott basement, like sub basement, like tucked away in the corner like redheaded stepchildren.
There was one panel room in the Hyatt, I want to say, that they were having, like, you know, steampunk panels. And they asked me to, because Matt was on the panel and Ace Talking Wolf was on the panel, a couple other people. And I was trying to get there on time, and I was like 15 minutes late because everybody was stopping. And I've never worn that intricate a costume before. And Dragon Con is, you know, jam-packed with
people. It's not a place to try something. Wear it around a little bit. Get used to it first.
No. I was like, you know, open the fire hydrant, take a drink. And I got there like 15 minutes late, and I walked in, and Ace was going on about something he had done. And everybody just, like, stopped and turned and looked at me in the back. And Matt's like, come up here. I was like, what? I was trying to, like, sneak my way in the back, just, like, stand in the background and be quiet. And he's like, no, come stand up here. And I was like, okay. And on top of that, in addition, they were still filming the 4 days at Dragon Con.
Yeah.
And so they were filming the progress of Matt making it with the group. And then they interviewed me at Dragon Con, and then it was on 4 Days of Dragon Con the year later when they published it. I was like, oh, yeah, I totally forgot about that. But that same year was when Outland did the Steampunk Star Wars group, too. And I kept going with it because I was like, all right, I don't want to be the other Steampunk Boba Fett. I want to be the Steampunk Boba Fett. So thanks to social media and my lack of any type of, you know, common sense...
The fact that you were at every single convention.
I literally, like, you know, when I moved down here in 2010, I just started going to
Went to all of the conventions.
Yeah, it didn't matter. Like, as long as it was sci-fi.
I don't know how many, like, random steampunk sites or videos I've watched on YouTube. It'd be like a music video. I was like, ah, damn it, there's John again. It's like just random shit.
It's like Where's Waldo, about. But like really easy to find.
Yeah. I just kept going with it. And using social media, somehow I got this big following considering I'm just a one-trick pony, you know.
I love you, John. You were such a good man because he really is a one-trick pony, and he knows this. This is great.
Hey, I'm humble. I try and keep my head.
As the steampunk Jabba Hutt, I feel for a one-trick pony, my friend.
No, and you know, I've gone and over the course of 5 years, I've worn other costumes, but everybody wants the Fett.
But John, you've mastered one thing that other people don't have, and you can call it one trick pony. You should instead call it brand recognition. Okay. There you go.
True. Yep. I mean, I did a short fan film. The T-shirt that Brian Kessinger put out. The Apparition Abolishers wrote a song. They filmed a music video for it.
I'm on a blimp. Go look it up.
That's another.
Extraordinary
Contraptions. Yeah, no, I've been in a couple music videos. I'm one of Professor Elemental's music videos. Like, I just happen to be at the right time, right place.
So I need to get a T-shirt. That's why I'm not famous yet.
That's your other superpower, by the way, because you are really good at that.
I am.
Yeah, my origin story is kind of the same. I ran into most of the Outland Armor guys are old Netherworld guys, so I've known them for years. And Danny was like, it was like 2 years ago, I was like, we're going to do all the bounty hunters from Return of the Jedi. We should have a Jabba the Hutt. And I'm like, hi, I'm fat. I'll be your Jabba the Hutt. Because I have no shame. I will wear like anything.
That was,
I'm like,
typecasting is what that was.
Yeah. I was like, hey, you build it, I'll wear it. I don't care, dude. And sure enough, that year that was like my first steampunk anything I'd been to. And since then, I've gone to a couple shows. But yeah,
and that's the beauty of it.
So much fun.
I really relate with Joe on this aspect. You know, as awesome as the costume is, you bring it to life. So it's a really good 50-50
match. It's a license to be an asshole is what I found. No, I mean, it is. The character. Like,
I hype up.
Hey, I get to do this naturally.
Yeah.
And people think it's funny now. Yeah. They don't just get pissed off and run away.
No, it's true. I mean, I hype up my personality, and I like funny, humorous reactions with people when I'm wearing it. So that's, I guess, what's like everybody's expecting the silent, badass bounty hunter, right?
Yeah.
And I break that fourth wall like three ways from sundown. So,
well, let me ask y'all this: since y'all have been to a bunch of cons, people that are like I said that maybe listen to this, who have never heard of steampunk, wanting to go out and experience their first convention. I mean, how open is it to people who aren't in costume, who just want to come check out the scene and think about getting into it? I mean, it's
absolutely fair game.
Yeah, you can walk around in t-shirt and shorts and just ogle everything. I mean, and the best part is most of the people there, and they don't have to be the guests or the vendors or whatever, the attendees will gladly talk your fucking ear off about everything and anything, either their opinion on the matter or what they're wearing or what they've built. It's there for everybody to kind of be really proud and show off, you know, what they've made.
I think that's one of my favorite things about it is that it is such a open community. If you don't know anything about what you're doing, you'll find a friend at one of these conventions, and they will tell you, all right, this is what you can do. And there are this is who you can go talk to or website to check out to start building your own stuff.
From my own personal experience, trying to do my first costume, I'm like sitting there taking pictures of gauges and random wires, sending it to people like, hey, what do you envision in your creative mind as this being?
And use the internet. It's an awesome tool.
Also, we have our own.
Yeah, the internet isn't just for porn, ladies and gentlemen. There are other uses for it, now and again.
So one of our our local information resources, the Artifice Club. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Q? The man behind it.
Do you want the original local version, or do you want what it's kind of become, or do you want both?
The whole evolution.
Yeah. What's the ad for the Artifice Club? Because that's a thing that I'm not 100% familiar with either. Yeah, I've heard of it around the community, but I've not really come to your events or anything yet.
Definitive outline with multiple points and subsections.
Oh, okay.
Cross referenced.
Okay. All right. So how much time you got?
Don't forget to cite your sources.
Let me do the short version. The short version of the whole story is goes like this. Tulu and I wanted to throw a big steampunk party. We wanted to kind of make fun of the pretentiousness of it all. So we thought of the funny name of the Artifice Club, because artifice is both fake and not. It gets the point across. And so we went, the Artifice Club presents the Mechanical Masquerade, which is what we did in November of 2010. And it was a great success. So we started just throwing parties as the Artifice Club. Had a little photo shoot, put up a website, and just kind of threw some parties and had a good time. And eventually we realized we kind of built this network of artists and musicians and performers and costumers and all these people that we just love being around. And Tallulah she's just been busy doing burlesque stuff. So it kind of became like me and these people that helped me out, like Jerry and Darren and John and a bunch of other folks. There's too many to list. I have a lot of help all the time, and they're great people. But we all just started to get burnt out, and we're like, you know, we can't keep doing this. there's only limited venue space in Atlanta.
And not everybody's made of money.
Yeah. And so we thought about what we can do to kind of like tack and change direction a little bit of, and so my thinking was, you know, one of the things that really still excites me to this day, and it has never failed to just constantly impress me, is the community itself. So I was thinking about what could we do for the entire community. So we launched a Kickstarter to change over this kind of event company thing into a nonprofit foundation. So the Artifice Club now is a vintage arts nonprofit, which vintage arts is our nice little buzzword that'll mean anyone doing anything creative with the past. So not just steampunk, but it also is for circus arts people and burlesque people and, you name it. As long as they're doing something with the past and they're having some sort of nod to it, we're there to help them. And that's what we're about now. And we're about to kick off a brand new website redesign, and we're going to kind of feature a way for artists to register, like to kind of register on the site and get some visibility out and amongst other artists, and really kind of push that whole nonprofit outreach aspect of things.
Do y'all have any, what we're at now. Upcoming events and stuff that y'all have been announced yet or anything?
Last year, funny thing. So last year was the first year operating as a foundation after the Kickstarter. And we tried desperately to do events, and we realized that an event company and a nonprofit company are not the same thing. And it was very, very hard lesson to learn. So we had to completely change how we did things. And so now we're just ready to kind of come out and start planning events and doing things. So we're going to do at least an event or two other than what we usually do every year at DragonCon. So we, along with the Alternate History Track, we do the we move the Mechanical Masquerades from this like rotating event around Atlanta to the big track party at DragonCon.
How long have you been doing the track director at DragonCon?
Yes. I do that as well.
4 years? No. How long?
This would be last year was my third year. So it's my junior year.
Enjoyed some of the steampunk stuff at Dragon Con, at least in the last couple of years. This is the man responsible.
No, yeah. For the past 3 years, it's been all my fault. You're welcome, and I'm sorry.
You bastard. He's a slave driver.
I could tell when I went to the panel John's on Sunday. With me all 3 years, like,
so
dead tired.
What'd you say, Q?
I say that's because you've worked with me all 3 years. That's why. That's why you say that.
Well, speaking of I kind of want to, get into a little bit, since y'all have definitely gotten more exposure to cons than we have. What are some other steampunk events, conventions around the Southeast or even around the country that, people should hit that may be unfamiliar with, the steampunk convention community?
Give the rundown of which ones are still running?
Yeah. What's something current people can go check out?
Well, in the Southeast, there's Contemporal in Raleigh, North Carolina. That's in June.
Contemporal's fun. I like that one.
It's not a big one, but it's a lot of fun. What's the one in Chattanooga that just started in August? What was that called?
I'm not sure if they're going to do another one.
Yeah,
they're not sure.
So it was kind of like maybe a one hit thing.
Rather the ones that we know are coming back in the Southeast is going to be Contemporal and. What's the other one? There's one that's getting ready. Oh, yeah, I remember now. There is the Steampunk Expo in Knoxville. That's like a fashion show, circus arts thing. And it's this weird little steampunk event in Knoxville. and it is usually right around August, like July, August, somewhere around there.
Right.
Now, like national scene wise, you've got some pretty big ones. There's Steampunk World's Fair.
That's up in New Jersey in May.
There's the Steampunk Empire Symposium, which you've been to.
It's in Cincinnati in April. Yeah,
it's in April. Some, I don't remember the exact date, but that one's in April.
There's Steamtopia, which is in Detroit, and it's not necessarily like the biggest event to hit, unless you're really into music, which if you are, that's the event to go to.
It's continuing on.
I love Steamtopia. That's one of my favorites. And there is – oh, almost forgot. Wild Wild West Con. That's coming up real soon.
Yep. That's in March out in Tucson, Arizona.
It's freaking incredible.
I'm going to have to make that one eventually.
I need a job there. I'm in. Yeah. There's Salt City Steam Fest, which is in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Yep. Went to that one. Another nice one.
Yeah. I'm going this year, John, by the way.
Oh, awesome. SteamCon was in Seattle, and that was running for, what, four years? They were the first,
and they ran for 4 years until they had to close down.
Right.
The last two are the one that's in Seattle now, John, is you went to that one.
That was Steamposium, I believe.
They're just so amusingly named to me.
I didn't know how many variations of the word steam there was before I started looking at these cons.
What's the one in Vegas that's coming up in February?
Oh, jeez. It's another variant, like next week.
Steam Slots Con. I don't know. I'm just making up names at this point.
Oh, man. I think they use steam in the word.
And I'm trying to remember what it was. But another one in September in San Diego is the Gaslight Gala.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually probably going to that one. And there's...
TeslaCon
in Madison, Wisconsin. That's usually around November, December.
There's also Emerald City Steampunk Expo.
Yep, that's up in Kansas, Nebraska.
Wichita.
Kansas,
And last but not least, the Steampunk Unlimited is in October in Pennsylvania. And I say that it is probably like freaking amazing because the historic railroad park in that place is the one that puts it on. So you literally have the show on the railroad.
Oh, that sounds
and these
awesome.
Are the main conventions, but
yeah, that are like pretty much mainly steampunk. What about like some bigger like non steampunk conventions that have like a good say steampunk panel, like Dragon Con has?
Dragon Con has the alternate history track,
yeah.
Which not necessarily is just steampunk.
Yeah, it's just,
but it kind of covers that.
Yeah, that's usually where the steampunk stuff ends up. Is that
all the steampunk stuff tends to
and
be?
Has it still kept the title as biggest track Q?
We remain the largest fan track, and I say that needs to be specified because the media tracks are kind of.
Hang on a second.
Guests and all that, so those numbers are always gigantic. But as far as the fan tracks go, we are the largest of them all.
Yeah, sweet. A lot of big, like. New York and San Diego Comic Cons, they have, you know, panels that revolve around. Because usually somebody kind of like the local steampunk scene from that area, they'll have, like, say, a couple panels devoted to steampunk, whether it be a 101 or whatnot.
New York Comic Con is huge. I mean, the steampunks always win the costume contests for the past 3 years in a row.
Yeah. So basically, no matter where you're at in the country, you hit Google or internet, whatever.
Although if you're going to do a big culture, like if you're going to do a big culture one, though, you know, New York Comic Con in the Northeast, C2E2 in the Midwest, Dragon Con here in the South, or MegaCon if you're in Florida because it's not technically the South.
Right.
Those would be the ones to hit up on this coast for sure.
Yeah, East Coast big ones are And
my buddy that was here last week has been to MegaCon a few times.
MegaCon's a huge one. Dragon, C2E2 in Chicago. New York Comic Con, even Otakon's a really big anime convention, and there is steampunk elements in anime. So if you go to anime conventions, you'll see steampunk in there too.
Right, absolutely.
For someone who is, they've said, all right, I'm doing this, I'm going to my first steampunk convention, what's some essential things that they must understand or must experience while out in the steampunk world?
Somewhere incorporate a flask in your costume.
Yes.
generally most people have worked in that form. They either have a hanging glass bottle and you're like, oh, what's this elixir or magical potion? And you're like, it's Johnny Walker.
most of my props dispense alcohol. That is yes. True.
Yeah, no, really. Like, I've not come across
the lantern core lantern from Dragon Con last year was amazing.
That dispensed bourbon. Yeah, I was a very fan of that.
Daniel Valdez, his steampunk Professor X.
Oh my god, the roving bartender. He was amazing.
That has a tap on it, a spout that dispenses vodka cranberry, and a coolant system to keep it cold.
That's awesome.
It's ridiculous. Daniel
isn't just amazing. Daniel is Tony Stark, the Tony Stark of cosplay. I mean, yeah, that man is a crazy. Freaking genius.
I mean, that's one of the things that I have seen. It's definitely a drinking crowd if you're into that. There's actual panels to mixology and like the history of bourbon. And we even went to a champagne sabering panel at Con last year.
The absinthe panel.
Yeah.
It really is kind of a drinking culture type of thing. I mean but there's also folks that really don't – like here's the thing that I like about steampunk events is if you go to a straight-up steampunk convention, the thing to remember is everyone's in there to make their own fun.
Yep. Yes.
So if what you like to do is drink, there's a drinking culture. If what you like to do is read, there are folks panels. That just go to those author panels and that's all they attend.
And
they tend to be pretty early in the morning.
I
don't tend to interact
with
them much,
you know,
but they're there.
Programming as well.
There are whole families that come. I mean, there are all ages people there. So even though late at night things get a little crazy, there are events where – who the hell's making – that's a weird-ass noise. Anyway, there are events where folks just bring their kids and everything. Like I went to Aetherfest in Texas a while back, and they had a whole like scout troop go through. I mean, it was crazy.
I think the coolest thing that was the kid dressed as a Jawa at the symposium last
year. Oh my God. With the wagon.
That's Brian's kid, Brian Kolig's kid. That kid is the coolest kid ever.
Like, she
was in full like character doing the Jawa thing, like trading people.
Walking around the vendor hall. She had it was basically a wagon, but they did it up to look like the Sandcrawler.
Yeah.
And she had all a bunch of junk and garbage in it that she
like
was trying
broken
to like
Roomba and
hawk and barter with the different vendors. Check out T-Dueling. T-Dueling is a lot of fun. There's conventions that have specific, like, a big thing in the Midwest is that a lot of them have these airship crews.
Yeah.
So it's just a way to get a group together, you know.
What is T-Dueling? Because I've seen that term at different stuff, but I've never been to one of those panels.
For a while. So basically, the general gist of it is you have two people sitting across from each other with a cup of tea, and then you have the biscuits, right? Yeah. And you have to dip halfway or three quarters of the way into the tea for 5 seconds, and then you pull out. And it's kind of like a game of chicken. The first person who eats first loses, but if your tea biscuit breaks, you lose. Say the other person's breaks, and then you go to eat it, if you don't get it all in your mouth, it's like a draw. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of rules to it, but it's just fun, you know?
I'm going to have to check that out the next time.
It's
next
silly. There's no actual winner.
It's silly fun.
People are randomly disqualified. I mean, the whole nine.
Yeah. I mean, when I go to these conventions, I like to have fun. I really do. My favorite memory, and I'll put a TeslaCon doing the multiculturalism panel.
Oh, that was the best.
You can go watch this on YouTube.
Multiculturalism panel.
Yep.
So do you guys remember Chasing Amy?
Yes.
So remember the beginning when they're at the Comic-Con, Minorities and Comics panel.
Yes.
Hooper X. Okay. So our friends of ours were putting this panel on, Multiculturalism in Steampunk, which is effectively Minorities in Steampunk.
Yeah.
And the four people up there, one was Tony Smoot. Aaron Egan, Jenny Hellum, and Jade. I can't think of Jade's last name. But basically, Jade was Puerto Rican. Jenny has Native American and Chinese in her. Aaron is Jewish, and Tony is black, right?
Yeah.
And I found out they were doing this panel like 3 weeks prior to the convention. I knew I was going. I said, look,
nice.
I want to do the bit from Chasing Amy at the end of the panel. And you can go, if this was filmed, you can go and watch it on YouTube. Just look up Multiculturalism Gone Wrong. And so it was kind of, you know, it's still kind of a hot topic, sensitive button for people. Yeah. And this is my way of like kind of like taking a little bit of levity, because first and foremost, my philosophy at cons is don't take yourself seriously.
Oh yeah.
I'm like, we're here to have fun. We're adults dressing up. I mean, be proud of what you've done, but you know what? Have a sense of humor, right? So
at the end of the day, we are a bunch of nerds playing dress up.
Yeah,
I mean, exactly. How serious do you really want to take this hobby? I mean, come on, guys.
So we took the script from that scene between Jason Lee and the actor who played Hyper X, and we kind of reworded it because he's talking about, you know, Darth Vader and Lando Calrissian, and we actually swapped it out with John Henry and Elijah McCoy. And Elijah McCoy was a Canadian African who he had several, like I think about 50 some patents that affected the, you know, steam revolution, you know, the Industrial Revolution at the time in the 1800s. The term "real McCoy" comes from one of the inventions he did on the rail system, right? But we kind of like reworded it a bit. We waited for the panel to be done, all the questions to be kind of like asked, cleared it with the con chair, and we had our plants in the audience. The one person to start it off asked Tony, "So why do you, you know, feel the need to have a black, you know, captain, airship captain?" That wasn't, you know, at the time. Because you think about it, steampunk takes a lot of the, like, best shiny qualities of the time, but kind of glazes over the horrible...
We ignore the bad stuff.
Yeah, horrible human conditions element of reality at that time. And so it starts off, and it, like I said, just go watch it on YouTube, but it ends up with...
I'm going to try to find that one.
Me getting killed by... Tony does a kind of Japanese steampunk outfit, so he has a kama and a samurai sword. And when we were talking about this, deliberating, you know, okay, how's it going to end? Because in the movie, Hooper Rex pulls out a fake
steam
gun.
Steam rage!
Yeah. And I was like... I'm like, and Tony's like, "I have an airsoft, you know." I'm like, "Do not bring a fake 45 and point it at
SWAT
the crowd.
SWAT teams will show up.
That's the last thing we need, because Madison, Wisconsin, they have nothing better to do." Okay, the security staff of the con is already like wound too tight. So
he would get shot.
It's like, you've got so much to worry about. It's a whole bunch of white people drinking. Okay, this is going to end up in disaster. So. I was like, "You've got your sword. Just come at me with the sword, and then you kill me that way." But we had people ready, like, at the end of it to, like, stand up and scream and go running out of the hall. And this was around 1 in the afternoon, like, Saturday. So it was talked about the rest of the convention. It was such a good time. It was so funny.
That.
So, you know, like, we try and, like, work these things in. We try and do stupid, goofy stuff. The other one we did the Ace theme, where we literally... I looked at my buddy Ozzy and Aaron and Tony. I was like, "Well, we got a black guy." And Tony just sighs because he knows, like, this is the role that we're going to lump him in every time. He's like, "Hey, we could do the Ghostbusters. We got a black guy." You know, it's like...
Well, we're just going to glue a mohawk on Brad and make him our Hannibal.
There you go.
We had him on for our Hitchhiker show because we were like, "We need a Mos Def. Come on."
Yeah, we're like, yeah. And he's like, "Are you kidding me?" We're like, and we were just talking about it as like being a joke that, like, you know, to do the podcast. But I'm like, now I was like, we totally need to cosplay that at Dragon Con because I got a green bathrobe and a fucking towel. We can do this.
Yeah, you guys are obligated now. We're on the record. I got that recorded.
Yeah. No, that's going to happen. That's one of my like casual costumes at Dragon Con this year.
All right. Well, I think we're about ready to wrap it up. Let's just go around the table. Any final thoughts on steampunk? Any information we haven't covered yet you think should be out there, and tell people how to follow you and the various things you're doing? We'll start with Q.
Okay. If there's something I can get across, if I just boil it down to one thing, it's this: anyone is welcome. I've heard 101 different excuses of people that really want to get involved in steampunk, but they don't. They say it's too expensive. That's bullshit. They say that they don't have the right body type for it. That's bullshit. I mean, anything you think is an excuse to not do it is complete and utter bullshit. Come in, have fun. We will welcome you with open arms, whether you're in jeans and a t-shirt or whatever your first costume is. Trust me, it won't look as bad as mine did.
Haven't seen mine yet.
Yeah, just come in and have a good time. Like, seriously, that's all we care about. Just as long as you're not a dick, you're fine. You're good. No problem. As far as where to find me, if you Google the Artifice Club, you will find us on all of the things. I mean, Facebook and Twitter and our website's artificeclub.com, all of that jazz. If you want to find me as like doing the DJ stuff, there's I put up my set list on Mixcloud, which as soon as we're done recording, I need to clean up my last recorded set and post that which I'll do that eventually. Anyway, so I'm on Mixcloud and Facebook as Dr. Q and all that other fun stuff. So that's me.
Brad, anything to last final thoughts?
I mean, I just think it's awesome, the openness of the culture and everything else, and I look forward to getting delve deeper into the depths of all things steampunk, and who knows, may go on some airship raids myself.
John, final thoughts, where they can find you? Where can they find the Ratchet Retrocast?
That's easy enough.
Oh, shit, I forgot about the podcast.
Yeah, me and Q are also on a podcast underneath the umbrella of the ESO Network. Ratchet Retrocast, you can find us on the Facebooks and now Instagram and Tumblr.
Oh, damn. And I haven't even done that yet.
We've got Tautastic and Twitter. but I mean, as far as like steampunk goes, you know, I thoroughly loved going to the conventions. I still do. And I love entertaining people. There's still a couple more. Like, I'm still in shock when certain conventions are like, hey, we'd love to have you out. And I'm like, Are you smoking something? Should I be worried? but I go out there and I do my damnedest to make sure that I live up to, you know, what they're bringing out.
As someone that has pimped you out before, you do your best job and I get nothing but praise from you.
Woo!
And I say pimped out as in like I've literally booked him for shows.
It's true.
Like at other places. I'm like, here. You're going to this place. You're getting paid this amount of money. Go and be you. And they're like, what? Really? What? Huh?
Hey, sounds good for me.
I've incorporated doing I am an officiant, so I do weddings in the FET. I'm up to 10 now. I've stripped at a bachelorette party.
Oh, my God. I remember that story.
Not all the way. I still had the helmet and kilt on. But when I took – this is the best part. When I took the kilt off –
at least you had the kilt
off. No. I took the kilt off, but I had a surprise. I had these black boxer briefs, and I got the Boba Fett plushie, sewn it to the crotch area. So when I ripped it off, I had this little Boba Fett just like right there.
It was Say hello to my little friend.
It was horrific. Say Thank hello God to my that little video friend. Never went public. There is a video, but
I'm going to find this.
No. It was loaded specifically to this girl's Facebook page, and I don't know who she is. She was one of the friends of the Bachelorette. But I mean, you know, you can find me, if you want to follow me on Steampunk Boba Fett, I've got Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Google+, I've got a YouTube account because I did a fan film. Like that was the other like random thing. My buddy Corey, he's a photographer and he does a lot of, heavy, Photoshop and editing on art. He goes, you know, I've got a buddy of mine that does some, CG graphics and rendering and I score music and I've got, you know, film equipment. And you know enough weirdos in costumes, let's make a movie. And we kind of did, and it's on YouTube, and it's a 12-minute short film. And we had a lot of fun making it, you know? So I try and keep, like, expanding out into different mediums. Like I said, like, being involved with music videos for my friends' bands that they do, or whatever. Like, whatever I can do, I try and, like, pitch in. So, like I said, you Google Steampunk Boba Fett, you're pretty much going right. to like find me.
But, and with John's stripping story, I think we'll wrap this up. like I said, just get out there, find your local steampunk crew, give it a try, you'll have some fun. And with that, we'll be right back with our Beer 30 segment.
Retrocast, your source for all things retro and steampunk.
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30. And welcome back to Beer 30. What are we drinking today, Brad?
Today we are drinking the Diesel Punk Stout.
Yeah, Diesel Punk.
I got to say, I love the artwork on the bottle, so be sure to stop by the Facebook page and check out the epic steampunk imagery we have for your pleasure.
Yeah, Diesel Punk, if you don't know what that is, it's kind of an offshoot of steampunk. It's instead of being the Victorian era, it's more of a postmodern, apocalyptic, you know, World War II era version of steampunk where there's a little bit more gas powered, things are a little bit dirtier and grittier. And Diesel Punk Brew has come up, they have three beers, an IPA, a porter, and a stout, and we are sampling the stout today.
Yeah, and you know, this beer we actually ended up picking this up at Kroger, so I would say it's available in most markets if you want to give it a try. You know, I keep reading a lot of people's reviews across various different websites, and I think folks are making the mistake of serving this beer too cold. Unfortunately, with this website, you don't really get, you know, the recommended glassware. Here, we're actually using a chalice, and then we've let the beer come up to about 50 degrees or so. So, you know,
yeah.
As it comes up, you start getting, you know, a lot more chocolate and coffee flavors is what I'm noticing, more so than just the, you know, freaking roasted malts.
Yeah, this is a, they describe it as a rousing dark stout, classic smooth and sweet with a combination of roasted malts and hops that awakens robust chocolate and coffee flavors. Yeah, I'm definitely getting the chocolate taste to it.
Yeah, and I just like the, you know, the marketing, the branding. The artwork actually on all three, you know, beers is freaking phenomenal. I'm not a big IPA fan, but you know what? I may just pick up a six-pack of it just for the artwork to freaking frame and display.
Yeah, their motto is, fueled by inspiration, engineered for taste.
Yep, so, you know, check out what the future holds in our new city and, you know, the vision that Diesel Punk has freaking brought to your
glass. I like their little quote on their website. It's like, once ours was a dark metropolis rife with corruption and urban decay, our suit-covered cities needed to be restored. Fueled with inspiration, we took what the future holds in our new city. Our vision, inevitably tainted by a layer of grime, fuel your vision with Diesel Punk engineered ales.
And with that, my friends, I will say, go out, try the beer. It's relatively inexpensive. Proper glassware, proper temperature. You won't be disappointed.
It's pretty good. We drink a lot of stouts here, and like I said, this one holds up. I would drink it again.
So for your official untapped rating, what are you going with, Joe?
I'm going with a 3.5.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree. Not my favorite, but by no means is it's, a it's bad definitely beer, drinkable. So yeah. I'm going to go 3.75.
All right. And with that, we'll be back with science.
Stay tuned.
Yes, science. And welcome back to the Cigar Nerd Podcast. It's time for some science. Where we drop knowledge like airships drop bombs. Boom.
That was very steampunky of you.
Yeah, I had to steampunk it up for the steampunk episode. So you ready to learn something there, Brad?
Yeah, man, what you got on the agenda today?
We're all going to die.
Hey, that's the only thing that's guaranteed in life. Shit. I like my odds.
Yeah, the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, which sounds like some kind of weird, you know, evil villain corporation. But they're the guys who maintain the Doomsday Clock, which is a theoretical clock that kind of measures how close we are to the world ending. And currently it is, well, it's been at 5 minutes till midnight since 2012, and they just raised it again to 3 minutes to midnight.
So we didn't know what kind of variables caused said clock to, you know, get pushed up or move back. Like,
well, it started in 1947.
It's like a sliding scale.
Pretty much. I mean, it started in 1947, and it's changed 18 times since then. The closest we ever been was like 2 minutes to midnight back in 1953, which was, you know, during, I don't know, just after World War II or something like that. if I remember my history. You know, it was like, you know, that was like, you know, some bad times. And then the last time we were this close as we are now was back in 1983 during the midst of the Cold War. And, you know, it changes for various reasons. What they're citing now for the sudden increase is, you know, climate change has kind of been unchecked. We've not really done anything to help with that. And also there's like a renewed arms race going on right now. Yeah, we kind of went through a disarming phase, and we have less, I guess, nuclear weapons than we did before. But now everything's kind of re-gearing up. They're going, instead of getting rid of nuclear weapons, they're replacing the old stockpile with newer, more deadly weapons. And like I said, climate change is kind of getting all jacked up, or at least that's what they say. And it's getting to the point where they say it's not irreversible yet, but it's getting, the window to do something is closing rapidly.
I mean, I guess this would be a good opportunity for a basically a great way to. Damn, my mind went blank on me. I got nothing.
You think about what that's a great time for, but hey,
great strong call to action.
There, oh, okay. I thought you were going to come up with something else.
No, like, you know, hell no. You think I got something intelligent to say about this? Like.
Yeah, this is the time to start your diesel punk post-apocalyptic cosplay, because then it'll just be normal, you know, wear.
Well, the sweet vest that I got on right now, then I'll just tatter it up and, you know, I'll incinerate it or something. That way it's got burn marks and all kinds of cool stuff.
I'm just going to start building my hot rod so that way when it goes all Mad Max style, I'll be ready for the Road Warrior action.
We just got to strap some shotguns, some machine guns, and other cool items on it, which is a great lead into later on in the segment, I believe. Look at that foreshadowing.
Yeah, they're like, apparently it's whatever the, you know, greenhouse gases levels are, you know, pretty bad at this point. They say like the melt in Antarctica is gone past the tipping point where that can't be stopped, and it's getting to the point where they said 2014 was the hottest year on record so far. So it's listen, if something's not done soon, it could be, you know, bad mojo for the rest of us.
Yeah, see, and I don't know. You know, I'll venture to say that us as humans, I mean, we have a great way to consume resources and to destroy things. But, you know, I have to think, as long as the Earth has been around and all the changes that occurred before humans were, you know, even a part of the equation, is there enough timeline and enough history to distinctively say that, well, humans, if you do this, then we can reverse it? Or is Mother Nature just saying, hey, humans, you aren't in control of anything, so I've got this. You just stand back and watch. You know, either learn to evolve and make do with what I'm giving you, or you perish like every other species prior to you.
Yeah. And I mean,
unless you're a cockroach, then you're good.
I mean, we're getting all this stuff now. You the electric cars and stuff, you know, trying to become a big thing. But electric cars still cause pollution, because that electricity comes from, you know, coal and fuel, and, you know, the electricity for the electric cars just, you know, isn't magical. It comes from somewhere else that burns your resources. So it's, you know, we may be using less gas, but we're still using, you know, causing pollution to generate the power to for the
electric
cars.
Yeah, I mean. I don't know, man. Articles like this, I just have a hard time. You know, I mean, so many people, just like theology and everything else, right? Two people can read and comprehend something very differently, and, you know, you can basically spin it and mold it into your head to be whatever you so choose it to be. And oftentimes I just see this as a political grab of, oh yeah, see, this is going on, so now you need to start donating to our campaign and our cause. And then some other group's going to counter with something completely opposite to say, okay, donate to our cause. And we got a bigger doomsday clock now.
Like, it's gone digital, man.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm just waiting for the zombie apocalypse. I mean, if the world's going to end, let it end with zombies, not nuclear war. Or maybe that's what starts the nuclear war, is that we have to nuke everything to get rid of the zombies. Yeah, you know, one way or the other, yeah, we're screwed. But to move it on to a more entertaining topic. Yeah, I've warned a lot on this podcast about the dangers of the coming robot uprising and apocalypse, but now robots may be doing something good for us because we now have robotic bartenders.
Well, before you jump into the good, I just want to point out that, you know, I read an interesting thing the other day that on the Rush Limbaugh show, he was actually talking about the very article we brought up about the impending robot doom and everything. So I just want to make it known that, you know, you heard it first here on the Cigar Nerds podcast.
Yeah, we were talking about that like, what, a few months ago?
Yeah. So, you know, all you other people, I mean, see, that's, dude, in our head, we've got the combat mentality. So we've already started prepping months in advance before the, you know, massive humans have you ever, you know, just thought that, oh, crap, this is about to be our impending doom.
Yeah, the
so we're good. We're like preppers, yeah. Podcast preppers.
Yeah, one of my friends was like, I don't know about the whole robot bartender thing. And I'm like, hey, the only way a robot I would like a robot bartender is if it can tell me dirty jokes or looks like the Terminator girl from, like, Rise of the Machines. And that's the only robot bartenders that I would, you know, like, because I like the human touch. But, I mean, these things are already in production. Right now, Royal Caribbean ship Quantum of the Seas has something they're calling the Bionic Bar and has these two robotic arm bartenders named B10 and N1C. And these things can make two drinks a minute or 1,000 drinks a day. And the video that I saw of it, it looks amazing because I think that there's just kind of like almost a chandelier of like the whole ceiling of the bar is these you know, upside down liquor bottles. And these things are just, you know, reaching up and, you know, getting shots from all these different bars. And,
see, this
and mixing
is very interesting because I took a course back in technology on robotics. So you actually had to go through and program and write the actual code for the robotic arm. I mean, we weren't pouring drinks, but you had to make the robotic arm swing around, pivot to one specific point, pick up like a little cube or a circular object, bring it back and put it on point B and so on. So, dude, I bet the video of this thing is almost like a ballet dance or something.
Yeah,
because
there's
between
two of
these arms.
These two arms, and they're dodging in and out of each other. And like all the, you know, all the liquor bottles are at set points so that, you know, it knows where the liquor bottles are because they're all hanging in this wall of liquor. And it just kind of like, you know, they touch the glass to it and it automatically drops the liquor in the glass. And, you know, it mixes, shakes, muddles, does everything. I think this bar holds like 30 different types of liquors. So it can make like all kinds of different drinks.
So each time a new drink is invented or if you try to concoct something new, I mean, that's going to force somebody inevitably somewhere to have to write a program for these arms to make that drink, right?
I mean, you could probably just input the recipe. You know, it already knows where the Jack Daniels and the Jaeger bottle is. So all you got to put in there is like, all right, it needs, you know, this much of this liquor, this much of this liquor, and whether it needs to be muddled, shaked, whatever, and it should be able to, you know, do it all. But they also still have human waiters to bring you your drink if you don't want to get your drinks directly from the robots, if that freaks you out.
I would
too
just
much.
Be like, hey, hold the gin or something like that. I mean, so these things probably are not voice activated or voice commanded then, are they? Or do we know?
I don't think it really says. But I mean, you probably just kind of input something from a menu and it goes off on its own. They kind of look like the robot arms from Iron Man, like the Tony Stark's little, you know, pet robot arm. That's pretty much what they look like. And I've seen some videos of the same type of robot doing sword fighting. I mean, they're highly accurate in their movements and stuff. I mean, they can fine-tune it down to, like, just, you know, minute
measurements.
Well,
I mean, if they got, you know, freaking robots out there performing surgeries and stuff like that, I mean, you know, compared to a human life versus, I mean, I don't know, man. There's no greater foul than,
and if
you
want
know,
the, if you want
spilled
the
alcohol.
Robotic bar experience at home, they've also released two home versions. There's a bar called the Monsieur, which will make 25 different kinds of drinks, and it's this big box looking, black box looking thing that, you know, just you type in what you want, and actually I think it runs off like a phone app, so you can have like the bartender app on your phone and type in what kind of drink you want, and the machine will mix it and, you know, spit out your glass of whatever. And there's another one that is called the Soma Bar, which is a smaller version. I think it holds six different liquors. And you can mix, you know, whatever combination of six liquors you want to put in there. But then I think that one runs about $700, and the bigger one is like a $4,000 machine.
I mean, the remote capabilities are awesome, though. I mean, could you imagine we're wrapping up a podcasting segment, and we're like, oh, yeah, we're going to be done in a couple of minutes, so let's just go ahead and
hit my phone app. All right, Jack and Coke, and the machine, my drink's waiting on me when I get done.
Yeah. Now if only it has a way to get it to you. I guess maybe we could, like, improvise, like, get one of those freaking,
We need like an R2-D2.
Automatic vacuum cleaner things and put it on Roomba. Some kind of track system so that way I can just run along the wall, you know, a little track and bring it downstairs to us.
We need like an old school like R2-D2 with a, you know, with that little like bartending dome he had on him in Jabba's palace just to bring us our drinks.
Is he going to survive the stairs?
We may have to move the bar downstairs for that. Another cool thing that if you like blowing stuff up as we do, shotgun shells with seeds for extreme gardening.
Yeah, I stumbled upon this article and I just felt it very appropriate to share with you. I mean, especially for both of our enthusiasms for all things firearms related.
Yeah, and these things look, they're green shotgun shells with a little flower on the side of them. It's called the flower shell. See if I can find the name of this company. Right now it's an Indiegogo crowdfunding campaign, but you can buy some of the shells straight from, you know, the Indiegogo campaign. And basically this guy came up, he wanted to have shotgun shells that gave life instead of taking them, and it's a concept that actually works. He's got some demo fields that he set up where these shotgun shells that are loaded with flower seeds will, you know, plant the seeds from just blasting the shotgun.
Dude, see, this is dangerous. I mean, what do I do when I mix up my home gardening ammo with my home defense ammo? I mean, I just got to get a shot of flower seed to the face. And
hey, man, somebody start, you know, be like a chia pet. You know, you shoot somebody in the face with the seed guns and they grow a moss beard later on.
That's a pretty sweet chia mohawk you got yourself there. Oh, dude, I mean, you could just load one of these things up with a freaking poison ivy or something. I mean, that.
Yeah, I mean, it's, like I said, I hate doing yard work and stuff, but if I could, you know, plant the flower garden with my 12 gauge, it's all good. Yeah, and hell, if we got seed shotguns, why can't we have like seed tanks and like, you know, seed airstrikes? Just but then again, this could be a trap, because I remember there was like an episode of G.I. Joe where I think Cobra did the same thing. We're like dropping bombs with these vine monsters that tried to like choke out the city. So I don't know, this could be like a Kickstarter.
I mean, it could be
like
dangerous.
Kind of,
I mean, somebody accidentally, you know, gets some kudzu seed or eco-terrorist something. Eco-terrorist action. Freaking kudzu, man. It'll take over the world.
Freaking dropping bombs of poison ivy on us and stuff.
I'm more worried about freaking kudzu than I am being killed off by climate change at this point. Damn, shows my rationality of priorities.
Yeah, there's a... You can actually order, get a set of four for $50 of these green shells. Yeah, there's a video on it too on their website.
Yeah, see, I didn't get around to watching the video. I would guess though that you'd have to pick up. Yeah, it's got to be a special seed. I mean, because, you know, certain plants require so much distance apart and everything. Like, you couldn't just.
Right now, it comes in poppy, peony, or cornflower. Is the three types of flowers they're currently offering. But, I mean, anything that's got, like, a hard enough shell that will, you know, stick into the ground when you shoot it, yeah, it should
forget
be able to...
about Poppy, man. We'll all be asleep. It'd be like the Wizard of Oz. Oh, we just got to cross this field? Oh, we're never going to make it. We're going to lay down and take a nap. I'm so sleepy.
Shooting flying monkeys with your sunflower shotgun shells.
Take that, you baboon. I think it's onto something. I think it's a great concept. So, folks, don't be too alarmed if you hire a landscaping company and instead of shovels and rakes and hose and things, they show up with shotguns.
Hey, man, belt-fed machine gun full of some flowers. I mean, it's all good.
I can't think of a better way to plant grass seed, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, instead of scattering it out, just start firing off some
redefine
rounds.
Redefine the meaning of a spreader. I mean,
because I did see one time there was... a company that were making like the skeet shooting things out of, it was basically like a Miracle-Gro or fertilizer combination. So, you know, instead of, you know, when you're out there shooting skeet, that stuff would just biodegrade into the ground, actually fertilize the ground in the field you were skeet shooting in instead of, you know, doing any kind of pollutant. So, you know, combination, you're doing skeet shooting with seed shells. You already got your fertilizer, your seeds. You plant a decent garden.
I mean, dude, that's kind of an idea. I mean, could you compact, you know, some soil and everything else to hold a skeet form? And, you know,
probably.
That way you shoot it and all you're doing is just, you know, spreading soil on top of...
if they can make them out of, you know, fertilizer now, then I don't see why not. They couldn't do it with some kind of, Yeah, they're already just made out of clay.
All right, that's it. I'm going to try to grow out my my hairline. I'm going to become a hippie, and I'm going to develop all-natural shotgun skeets.
All right, well, that, folks, we'll be we'll finish this up and be right back with some nerd news.
Stay tuned.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in nerd news.
And welcome back to nerd news. This is going to be the first installment of hopefully a recurring segment if we get a enough of these banked. But this is going to be our blowing smoke interview segment. And since this is our steampunk episode, we are talking to steampunk author, radio host, Mr. Travis Savart. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you. Good evening, gentlemen. It's what are you guys drinking over there? Oh, you're looking forward to having me?
Absolutely.
I love to be had.
Well, you know, we're trying to go to the symposium this year, so if you're there, maybe we can hook that up.
Actually, will not be happening. I've got a con the very same weekend that I'm already dedicated to this year. All right, but symposium is a great show. It's definitely a great con.
Yeah, I went there last year. I'm still trying to work it out for him to be able to make it this year or not, but hopefully
that's
we'll
right.
be there.
That's where we met last year.
Oh yeah. So steampunk books. We know you've author of the Steampunk for Simpletons and the Aether
Etheric Elements.
Yes. I have not read that one yet. I'm about halfway through the Steampunk for Simpletons, and it is so far it's an awesome book, especially for someone, like I said, the theme of this show has been kind of intro to steampunk, and I mean it's a great resource for not just crafting, but like the history behind it and all the other different avenues of steampunk for people to look into.
I tell you what, Joe, it was great fun putting together, because when we came up with that concept, it actually came out of the radio show that you mentioned previously. We did an episode like that. I went, that'd make a great book. And it's as you've seen, a kind of four dummies, idiot's guide type style.
Wait, why did you not already pass this off to me?
So I just got it Monday. I haven't had a chance to give it to you yet.
It's one of those books you could pick up and flip through and not read it cover to cover, but look at what you find and look at what you like. And when I did it, I didn't want to be one person telling you how to do it right. So I pulled from over a half dozen countries, and more than two dozen different people contributed articles and opinions to the book. So it's not just me telling you this is how it is. It's from all across the world.
Yeah, that's what I liked about it too, because it's like different sections are kind of written by people that are more involved in that field of it. Like even the I think we spoke earlier in the show about steampunk also being a good open to family friendly, and you know, you mm-hmm. had your son write the base of the kids section of the book.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's a different point of view. Yeah, it's you know, and I believe I mentioned steampunk Star Wars in there, which you've done steampunk Jabba the Hutt.
Oh yeah, I know Dr. Q and steampunk Boba Fett Strangeoy are mentioned in the book, and they were our guests earlier in the program, so it's definitely be a steampunk heavy edition of the podcast.
I didn't even break out the vest this time around, so
you know, we didn't have time to decorate. I just walked in the door. So, what, like I said, writing is one of the things that it's interested me, but I have no clue how to actually go about, you know, I don't have time, barely have time to do this podcast, much less write a whole book. So what's, you know, how is it different writing for a steampunk genre, or is it, you know, like any other, you know, writing process?
It is a blend of science fiction and historical writing. If you're going to write in a historical version of Earth, you need to know your history, at least some of it, so you can fill in the big gaps. If you're going to create your own world, then it's strictly sci-fi, because that's what steampunk is. It's Victorian-era science fiction. So it's that simple.
And, I mean, is there a difference between writing your fictional works versus, you know, like a non-fictional book like The Simpletons?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. When you're in a non-fictional book, of course, that depends how you want to come across, whether you want it to sound like stereo instructions or if you want it to sound like a conversation like we're having here, and I prefer the latter. So with doing that, I definitely wanted, when you read it out loud, for it to sound like a conversation and have it flow a certain way. Whereas with fiction, you're feeding them the environment, and you have to give your reader enough that they feel like they're there. You have to get to know the characters and connect to the characters in fiction. In nonfiction, they have to connect to you.
Yeah, that's what I like about this book so far, is it is very conversational. I mean, I've read some books, especially that are like information heavy books that, yeah, you fall asleep after a chapter because it is very much like stereo instructions.
Yeah, I think being more of a conversation, you know, styled dialogue definitely appeal to somebody like me too. That way, you know, it's not like somebody talking at me versus, you know, a group of people trying to come together with their collaborative ideas and things and share those, and then you become a part and immersed in the readings.
Absolutely, and that's what the whole steampunk community, at least for me, has been that way, where you get to interact. And as it grows more mainstream, you get more of the mainstream clicks and whatnot, but I really still feel like the core of it is community as opposed to one person talking at you.
Yeah, that's one thing. I'm still consider myself very new into all this, and it has. That's one thing I've liked about the community so far, is it is a very open group. I mean, there's people. I've not met anybody yet that has been not friendly and willing to share advice, information, and really welcome people into the community.
I've seen one or two, but they're few and far between, and most people recognize them for what they are, and they don't last long.
Yeah, I've met a few people that are. And when they're in character, they're super serious about being in character. But then other people are willing to break character and, you know, answer your questions and whatnot. So how did you originally get into steampunk and into writing?
You know, actually, I was just thinking about this earlier, the steampunk part. The writing thing, I'll get into that in a second. Steampunk started in 2010. I threw an outfit together to go to a Renaissance fair that was having a steampunk weekend. And I don't even remember what made me wear steampunk before that. But shortly after that, I went to Steampunk World's Fair, and it was later, not too long after, just the next year, when I started a internet radio show based on steampunk, which was Sounds of Steam. The writing thing started out when I was a child. I read a lot. In my teens, I wrote the crappy poetry that we all write, and I wrote some stories, you know, all three pages of it, and then kind of lost track. Dungeons and Dragons happened. That was my storytelling outlet, playing tabletop role-playing games. I had players who refused to DM if I was around because they just wanted to play. Dude, I had one guy who – I played one game with him. 10 years later, I was hanging out with my buddies that I gamed with. He saw me. He's like, oh, you're that guy. That was the best game ever. And I'm like, well, thank you, but you should get out more. So I guess I have a storytelling knack, and that's where the roots are. It's reading a lot and tabletop role-playing games.
Yeah, that's something I need to get more into. I mean, I used to do a lot of writing when I was in school and stuff, but it's been a lot of years since I've tried to write anything creatively instead of just, you know, informational report.
Yeah, I used to
writing
try
is amazingly easy, but amazingly hard. The easy part is doing what you love, talking about what you love, but putting it into words. The hard part is actually sitting your ass down and writing every day.
Oh yeah, because I mean, my schedule's so screwed up. I my to-do list always gets longer, never gets shorter. It's be one more thing to try to fit into my schedule.
I found myself, you got to make sacrifices, which might mean your Facebook time or your favorite television show. Instead, you buy it on DVD, watch a season in 3 days, but you skip that, you know, 3 hours a night you're in front of the TV or whatever.
Yeah, the other thing, well, you said you're going to something besides the symposium this year. What's some, some conventions, since you've been out to more cons than I have at this point, what's some other conventions that you think people should check out?
You want steampunk specific?
Steampunk or just in general. Like I said, we've...
Okay. I've done more steampunk conventions than standard conventions. I've done a few smaller standard conventions. I'll hit the steampunk first. Every convention Sessions I gone to own feel. It has its own personality. Tessacon is one of the most elegant steampunk conventions I've been to.
That's what I've been hearing a lot about. I may have to check that one out eventually.
It's a weekend-long show is what it is that you're interacting with, whereas Steampunk World's Fair is this huge, massive convention where it's just constant bombardment of things to do and things to see. So if you're a heavy introvert, probably not the one for you. But if you love excitement and fast pace, that's a great convention. A nice middle ground is Contemporal in Raleigh, North Carolina. And that's a steampunk one. But each year they have their whole convention travels to a different year.
Oh, that's interesting.
So, yeah, it's very cool. I think last year was Mobsters in the 1930s. And this year I want to say is 1642 or something.
That's interesting.
1342, something like that. It's a little bit back there, and they're following basically a plot line through time trying to find out who's messing with things. So if you go year to year, story continues forward.
Oh, that's pretty cool. So it's almost like a giant role-playing game in itself with the a continuation of the story going on every year.
Absolutely.
You have any questions, Brad? Because I've kind of monopolized
that. Well, I've read a lot more, so please, yes, interrupt me.
you got anything?
Well, I mean, you know, just overall, you know, me not having a clue, just listening to your guys' conversation, wealth of knowledge, you know, as far as steampunking on a budget, any advice or anything from that standpoint?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Go find your favorite dress clothes, okay? Get yourself a nice pair of slacks and a nice button-up shirt. Old-fashioned looking if you can, and then go hit your thrift stores. Play in your thrift stores. Make it a regular weekly or bi-weekly thing. Look for vests. Look for shoes. Look for hats. These are your three key pieces. After that, it's a matter of accessories. So checking that jewelry cabinet, the costume jewelry at your thrift store, you pick stuff for $1 to $10 each. That's how you build your costume.
Perfect.
That simple. Oh, I had one buddy of $100 is your thing. First steampunk convention last year. Hey, Joe, you remember seeing Steampunk Mario?
Yeah. I mean, that was
my buddy.
Yeah.
That was his first convention. We went to Walmart the night before and bought everything except the hat.
Yeah, I mean, it was like I said, it looked awesome, but it was a fairly simple to put together thing, or at least it, you know, appeared so. So yeah, you can be the guy with the, you know, custom leather, you know, fancy stuff, you know, that's been built by a known artist, or like I said, just simple thrift store stuff. It's really, you know, open to anything to get into it.
Also, if you have another genre you're interested in, and like Brad, if you're into comic books or dressed like superheroes or Old West or Renaissance fairs, blend it with steampunk. Take that outfit from whatever you've played in before and throw a few accent pieces on that makes it steampunk. Remember, steampunk has time travel. So you pull anything in from anywhere.
Yeah, because if you don't want to go with a regular Victorian style, you can make steampunk versions of just about anything.
That's, you know, kind of my costume for this year essentially is looking to go more the Victorian dress style. And then, you know, as I become more crafty and develop more resources, then, you know, expand my costumes from there into something more elaborate.
And one other thing I wanted to get go ahead, sir.
No, I was just going to say you could even do a steampunk skater punk.
There you go. Build you a steampunk skateboard. You still remember how to skate, don't you?
Dude, I could never skateboard. The couple of times I was on a skateboard, I was all into BMXing. So, I can steampunk my BMX bike. There we go.
And if you crash, you can always steampunk a wheelchair to be steampunk Professor X. You've got the hair for it.
Sweet. Or lack thereof.
There you go.
Yeah, one other thing I wanted to get into is, you know, we're all familiar with the podcast side of things, but doing a live radio show, that's something we've never delved into. Tell us about your show and how that got started and what's going on now.
It came about because I had a buddy that did a radio show, and he's like, hey, call in. And he asked me, you know, 2-3 minutes about steampunk. And then his producer came to me and went, do you want your own show? Now, that fell through with that radio station, but I mentioned another buddy, oh, this fell through, and he goes, I got a friend that runs a internet radio station. Hold on, I'll put you in touch with him. A week later, I was on air. And that simple, it's very similar to running a podcast, except I have gathered a live audience that can interact via Twitter, email, or a Facebook event page that we put up every week. So they can talk to us. We now have a phone line where they can call in to us. And, yeah, you get your regulars. It's talk of the tavern now. We all have our drinks and our smokes and sit back, relax, and misbehave.
Hey, drinking and smoking and misbehave, we can all get behind that.
Yeah, I think we do that on a daily basis.
I know right now y'all are starting a Kickstarter to try to get the next level of the show going. Tell people about that. Share it with our audience.
Actually,
we'll put up links to that stuff on the show notes and on our Facebook webpage as well, and try to help y'all get the word out.
Awesome. Thank you. Actually, it was a backslide is what happened. I moved to an area that didn't have cable or Fios internet. I have satellite, and I can't even maintain a solid Skype link at my house anymore. I have to borrow friends' internet to run my show. So looking at this, I looked at the possibility of running a line, $130,000. I couldn't turn around and ask my listening audience for $130,000. So I went, you know, I've got an idea. I can get a cell booster and a data card, and one of my co-hosts can run the technical. All I need is the booster and a few other pieces of equipment. So let's ask for $6,000, which is what the Kickstarter is asking for. And then I made the stretch goals. And this is what I'm really pushing for. It's the show will probably continue. I don't have much worry about that. But I would love to hit $150,000. And if I do that, I will start my own internet radio station, including purchasing a building that will be a permanent studio. So I can take all these little podcasts that are so awesome like yours – and have a selection and variety of shows that we haven't seen since before television. Kind of like Weird Al's UHF.
That'd be pretty cool.
So you guys, you want to run Wheel of Fish?
Oh yeah, where people can just do very niche programming. Not like a regular broadcast radio station where you're beholden to certain sponsors or the FCC or whatnot. But yeah, that's, like I said, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I've just kind of started delving into the internet radio stuff, but there's definitely a lot of interesting programs that you can find out there.
There definitely is. And with a lot of if I brought shows in, I wouldn't even say you have to be live. It would just give you one more place to put your podcast. The only catch would be, I just have to know it's on a regular basis. So yeah, it doesn't matter if it's pre-recorded. You just now have a radio station that you can go, my show's on every Wednesday at that time or whatever.
Sweet, yeah. We may have to come up with some other projects too. Like we can do the straight-up cigar hour instead of our 5-minute introduction.
Oh, yeah.
We can find something to delve deep into.
Yeah, like more cigars.
Yeah. Or some, I'm interested in the whiskey tasting.
I think we're replaying – right now for the next 6 weeks, we're replaying old episodes with a little tacked on the front and the back that's new. And I don't remember if we have the whiskey tasty going up there, but we did one, and oh, that was a fun episode.
Yeah, I saw more fun as it went. The stretch goals, y'all want to do a scotch tasting. I would definitely tune in for that one. Yeah, excuse to sample something's good for me. Well, I think that'll about wrap us up. Tell people where they can find your stuff, listen to you, and – follow along and whatnot.
The easy way to find me is talkofthetavern.com. That'll lead you to the Tumblr, the Pinterest, Facebook, the Kickstarter, Twitter, and all the other places. But generally, if you just search for Talk of the Tavern, you're going to find me, whatever social media you're on. Other than the Kickstarter, we love your help. We are all about the community, and I think that sums it up.
All right. Well, thanks for your time, sir, and we'll be right back with our final thoughts. And that about wraps up the show. Any final thoughts there, Brad? Since we didn't really cover a news segment this week, is there any kind of short stuff that some highlights that people may want to check out?
Daredevil Netflix series looks absolutely badass. Looks like we had a new trailer released, and it's really got me amped up. You know what? Forget about Ben Affleck, all I can say.
Also, they've announced X-Files is going to be returning. Don't know when yet, but everyone's signed on to bring the X-Files back. That's one I'm definitely looking forward to. this has been our steampunk intro episode. We are actually going to be at a con at the end of the month. It's February 26th to the 1st at AnakerCon in Atlanta, Georgia. Right now, we're just going there to hang out. We don't have any kind of panels or anything we're doing this go-around, but we are planning on doing a meetup and cigar night sometime during the con. We kind of went down there this last weekend and scoped out the hotel and figured out a good place to hang out. And we'll let you know exactly what night that's going to be. It'll probably be sometime on the Friday of the show if you're going to be there. But stay tuned to our Facebook page. I'll post the details as soon as we figure out exactly what we're doing. And, you know, come bring a cigar, hang out, smoke with the cigar nerds, and we'll talk a little steampunk. Anything else you want to say, Brad?
I just want to say I appreciate all the guests and everybody else that we had on during the course of the episode. It was a great collaboration of folks, and I learned a lot of valuable information that I will be using to take with me to this con and future cons to come.
All right. Remember, check out our website, CigarNerdPodcast.com. Hit us up on Twitter and Facebook. Our Twitter is CigarNerdPod, or at CigarNerdPod. I always screw that one up. And like I said, be sure and like I said, go on. We're available. Shows available on iTunes and Stitchers. Give us a like. Give us a follow. Share. Let's see if we can get some more people listening to this show. And as always, remember, Goonies never say die. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast with your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.